to me your secrets. Show me your nightmares. All cats are gray in the dark, dear. Whether or not you dare.
Welcome to All Cats Are Gray in the Dark. I'm your host, April Simmons. This podcast contains true cases of graphic violent crimes and other stories of a dark nature. Please be advised that due to the subject matter and violent, sometimes sexual content and obscene language, this podcast is not for children or the faint of heart.
Come in!
And we're back for part two of the Sabrina hosting extravaganza about poltergeists.
Yet again, sorry.
Is good.
Yeah. So this episode is about the Enfield poltergeist. I can
you gotta keep up the accent if you're gonna do it.
This episode is inspired by the Enfield poltergeist, which inspired The Conjuring 2,
which I love. The Conjuring series.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen this one. So coming across it, it took a while to realize it was actually what Conjuring 2 was based on. So this one is, the story of the Enfield poltergeist. This is why I don't host. I'm sorry, guys. I'll get better one day. All right.
Don't worry. I'm going to make her host again for the holidays, too. She'll be off school.
Yeah, I'll be off school for forever as of December 10th, and I'm very excited.
Our mom's birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday. Not really. anyway, so this kind of just reads really oddly, so I apologize, but it was like the most interesting variation of this story that I could find. So let's get going. I'll try not to do voices, but that's not true. The rasping male voice sent a chill through the room. Hauntingly, it delivered a message from beyond the grave, describing in graphic detail the moment of death. I'm already doing voices, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Or exaggerating my own. Just before I died, I went blind and then I had an hemorrhage. And I fell asleep and I died in the chair in the corner downstairs. The eerie voice, which can still be heard on audio tapes today, is purportedly that of Bill Wilkins. The recording was made in Enfield, North London, in the 70s, several years after his death. Most horrifying of all, however, was that the voice was coming from the body of an 11-year-old girl, Janet Hodgson. She appeared to be possessed. It could have been a scene from the film The Exorcist, but it was real. What was going on? This was the case of the Enfield poltergeist, which held the nation spellbound 30 years ago, puzzling policemen, psychics, experts in the occult, and hardened reporters alike. It involved levitation, furniture being moved through the air, and flying objects swirling toward witnesses. There were cold breezes, physical assaults, graffiti, water appearing on the floor, and even claims of matches spontaneously bursting into flame. A policewoman even signed an affidavit that she had seen a chair move. There were more than 30 witnesses to the strange incidents. So I didn't know, like I said, I haven't seen Conjuring 2. I just assumed by what I had seen of it that it was just a possession case. I didn't realize it was also a poltergeist. So it was double time, making it extra scary.
Well, I mean, a lot of cases in exorcism cases.
True.
Stuff
have poltergeists. Around.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of times
it's just not considered both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most inexplicably, sorry, I'm eating a piece of candy, so my voice is going to sound weird probably. The young girl at the center of the event seemingly acted as a mouthpiece for Bill Wilkins, a foul-mouthed, grumpy old man who had died in the house many years before, which, I mean, haunted or possessed kids are scary anyway, but the fact that it's a grumpy old man that cusses, like, I mean,
yeah, just adding that extra sprinkle of goodness on top.
His son contacted investigators to confirm the details of his story. The events unfolded for more than a year behind the door of an ordinary looking semi-detached council house on a suburban street filled with similar houses, and left those they touched permanently scarred.
Naturally, many question whether it was all a hoax, but no explanation other than the paranormal has ever been convincingly put forward. Well, I mean, if that's what you're looking for. But
yeah, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah. Now the episode is to be revisited in a film planned for release at Halloween next year. I'm assuming that's the one Conjuring came out.
Probably.
So this was before that. Just what happened in Enfield then all those years ago? Where are the Hodgsons now, and have they escaped their ghosts? Could they have made the whole episode up? And Lou, who lives at 284 Green Street now? The story as the Hodgson family told it begins in 1977. Peggy Hodgson was unusual at the time in that she was a single mother to four children, Margaret 12, Janet 11, Johnny 10, and Billy 7. That's a whole lot of adolescence there.
Yeah. Just channeling just like a giant spotlight to this house. Look at all these kids.
Having split from their father. It was the evening of August 30th, 1977, so that's not long after I was born.
It was your fault.
No. Like Elvis's death. Like, according to my dad, I killed Elvis. And Mrs. Hodgson was keen to get her children into bed. She heard Janet complaining from upstairs that her and her brother's beds were wobbling.
No, thanks.
Yeah, I know, right.
Don't mess with Hodgson, my sleep, man.
Mrs. Hodgson told her daughter to stop mucking around. The following evening, however, was an altogether more bizarre disturbance. Mrs. Hodgson heard a crash from upstairs. Cross, she went to tell her children to settle down. Your turn.
Yeah, sorry. Entering their bedroom with Janet's Starsky and Hutch posters on the wall, Miss Hodgson saw the chest of drawers move. She pushed it back, but found that it was being propelled towards the door by an invisible force. It seemed as if some supernatural presence was trying to trap the family in the room with the heavy oak chest. Many years later, Janet would tell a Channel 4 documentary, "It started in a back bedroom, the chest of drawers moved, and you could hear shuffling. Mom said, 'I want you to pack it in.' We told her what was going on, and she came to see it for herself. She saw the chest of drawers moving. When she tried to push it back, she couldn't." Janet's sister Margaret explained how the activity increased. "There were strange little noises in the house. You couldn't make out what was going on. None of us got slipped." I just love how that's phrased.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using it. "I didn't get slipped. We put on our dressing gowns and slippers and went next door. The family appealed for help from their neighbors, Vic and Peggy Nottingham. Vic, a burly builder, went to investigate. He says, 'I went in there and I couldn't make out these noises. There was a knocking on the wall, in the bedroom, on the ceiling. I was beginning to get a bit frightened.' Margaret adds, 'He said, I don't know what to do. I've never seen a big man like that look scared.' The Hodgsons called the police, who proved to be similarly mystified. WPC Carolyn Heaps saw a chair move. She said at the time, a large armchair moved unassisted 4 feet across the floor." All right, that's a little different. Like, I don't know, sometimes when you read the descriptions, like, "I saw a chair move," like, I just imagine it being like, you know, but like,
a rocking chair just moves.
Yeah, that's what you kind of imagine. But 4 feet across the floor is a little different.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny, the explanation, like, just picturing the burly builder dude going in there and be like, "I've got this." And then he runs back out or something. Like,
like when we did the haunted houses and it was always like the giant football players that came running screaming out of there.
Left their women behind in the woods.
Yep. Yep.
It happened, folks. She inspected the chair for hidden wires but could find no explanation for what she had seen. Eventually, the officers left, telling the family that the incidents were not a police matter, as they couldn't find anyone breaking the law.
I mean,
good point. True. I mean, touche. They don't know what to do. They're like,
Call Zelda.
Yeah, call Zelda Rubenstein. Next, the Hodgsons contacted the press. Daily Mirror, blah, blah, blah. I can't talk today, apparently. Photographer Graham Norris, who visited the house, says it was chaos. Things started flying around. People were screaming. Well, that sounds fun. That reminds me of the Rain Man. Were you around when I did the Rain Man episode?
I don't think so. Maybe. I don't remember.
There's a guy that caused it to rain in a house.
That sounds familiar, but I think I only listened to it.
Yeah.
I think that
it's
was
a really interesting episode because all kinds of stuff started happening around that dude. And there were police witnesses, so that made it all the more credible. Like, yeah. They're like, for real, though, it was raining in their house. You know? And there was other stuff, too. Like, I think there were pans that flew around or something. But then he went to a public place. There was, like, an Italian restaurant, like a pizza place or something. And it started raining in there, too. Like, it...
What the heck?
Yeah, so it's like... It really would be hard for somebody to hoax from one place to another. Like,
yeah,
you know, where's the setup time there? You know, yeah. Like, I don't. And he even supposedly made it happen once he went to prison for other stuff.
What the hell?
There was a very troubled dude. And I really think that it came from inside of him because he had been abused. He had been abused and stuff. And I really think that mental stuff was going on with him, and that's what the cause of it was. I do believe there was paranormal happening, but I believe it was caused by him. You know?
Yeah.
Because there were just so many witnesses in that case, it's hard not to believe it. Now, where was I? I completely lost my place. Oh, yeah. People were screaming. Some of the events were captured on camera, and the images are disturbing. One shows Janet's elfin form apparently being thrown across the room. I don't understand that. Oh, I guess because she was little. Okay. I was confused by the wording there. And I was like, who's her elfin form? And others, her face is just, I was like, when did this story grow an elf? Okay. Like,
Dobby is a free elf.
And others, her face is distorted in pain. The BBC went to the house, but the crew found the metal components in their tape equipment had been twisted and recordings were erased. Next, the family sought help from the Society for Psychical Research, which just sounds wrong to me, but pronouncing that just sounds weird. It sent investigators Maurice Gross and Guy Lyon Playfair, which is some of the weirdest names ever, guys.
Mm-hmm.
A poltergeist expert who subsequently wrote a book, This House is Haunted, about the affair.
The author, Will Storr, spoke to Gross, who has since died, when researching his own book, Will Storr versus the Supernatural, which also features the case. Gross told him, as soon as I got there, I realized that the case was real because the family was in a bad state. Everybody was in chaos. When I first got there, nothing happened for a while. Then I experienced Lego pieces flying across the room and marbles. And the extraordinary thing was, when you picked them up, they were hot. That's some hot marbles and Legos you got there. I was standing in the kitchen and a t-shirt leapt off the table and flew into the other side of the room while I was standing by it. The investigators found themselves caught in a maelstrom of apparently psychic activity with every poltergeist trick thrown at them. Sofas levitated, furniture spun around and was flung across the room, and the family would be hurled out of their beds at night. One day, Maurice and a visiting neighbor found one of the children shouting, "I can't move, it's holding my leg!" They had to wrestle the child from what all involved insisted was the grip of invisible hands. The ongoing knocking was one of the most chilling aspects of the case. It would run down the wall, fading in and out, as it apparently played an unnerving game with the family, who became so scared that they slept in the same room with the light on.
I can't say I blame them. That sounds pretty fucked up.
No joke.
Most of the activity, of course, centered on 11-year-old Janet. She went into violent trances, which were awful to behold. On one occasion, the iron fireplace in her bedroom was wrenched from the wall by unseen forces. Family members also claimed to have seen her levitating, floating clean across the room. She told Channel 4, "I felt used by a force that nobody understands. I really don't like to think about it too much. I'm not sure the poltergeist was truly evil. It was almost as if it wanted to be part of our family. It didn't want to hurt us. It had died there and wanted to be at rest, and the only way it could communicate was through me and my sister." Some cast doubt on the events, however. Two SPR experts caught the children bending spoons themselves and questioned why no one was allowed in the same room as Janet when she was using her gruff voice, apparently that of Bill Wilkins. Indeed, Janet admitted they fabricated some of the occurrences. She told ITV News in 1980, "Oh yeah, once or twice we faked phenomenon just to see if Mr. Gross or Mr. Playfair would catch us, and they always did." Now age 45, Janet lives in Essex with her husband, a retired milkman. "I wasn't very happy to hear about the film. I didn't know anything about it. My dad had just died, and it really upset me to think about all this being raked over again." She describes the poltergeist activity as traumatic. "It was an extraordinary case. It was one of the most recognized cases of paranormal activity in the world, but for me it was quite daunting. I think it really left its mark, the activities, the newspaper attention, the different people in and out of the house. It wasn't a normal childhood." Asked how much of the phenomenon at Green Street was fake, she said, "I'd say 2%. So.
She also admitted playing with a Ouija board with her sister just before the activity flared up at the house. Well,
there you go.
Your own damn fault. She said she was unaware that she went into trances until she was shown pictures. "I recall being very distressed by the photos when I was a child. I was very upset. I knew when the voices were happening, of course. It felt like something was behind me all of the time. They did all sorts of tests, filling my mouth with water and so on, but the voices still came out." Mm, I don't like that. She says it was hard. "I had a short spell in Maudsley Psychiatric Hospital in London where they stuck electrodes on my head, but the tests proved normal. The levitation was scary because you didn't know where you were going to land. I remember a curtain being wound around my neck. I was screaming. I thought I was going to die. My mom had to use all her strength to rip it away. The man who spoke through me, Bill, seemed angry because we were in his house. The situation had a huge effect on the family." Janet says, "I was bullied at school. They called me Ghost Girl and put crane flies down my back." Ooh, what's that? I don't know what that means.
Oh, I don't want to know. It sounds creepy.
I'd dread going home. The front door would be open. There'd be people in and out. You didn't won't know what to expect, and I used to worry a lot about Mom. She had a nervous breakdown in the end. I'm not one for living in the past. I want to move on, but it does come to me now and again. I dream about it, and then it affects me. I think, why did it happen to us? Her brother was called Freak Boy from the ghost house, and people would spit at him in the street. Janet herself was on the front page of the Daily Star with a headline, "Possessed by the Devil." She left home at 16 and married young. "I lost touch with everything. All the coverage of the case in paranormal books. My mom felt people walked over her at that time. She felt exploited."
Yeah, I can kind of get that.
Yeah.
Shortly after the press attention drifted away, Janet's younger brother, Johnny, died of cancer, aged just 14. That's sad. Yeah. Janet's mother then developed breast cancer, dying in 2003, and Janet suffered the loss of her own son in his sleep when he was 18. She rejects any suggestion that the whole story was faked in pursuit of fame or money. "I didn't want to bring it up again while my mom was alive, but now I want to tell my story. I don't care whether people believe me or not. I went through this and this was true." Asked whether she believed the house is still haunted, she says, "Years later, when Mom was alive, there was always a presence there, something watching over you. As long as people don't meddle the way we did with Ouija boards, it is quite settled. It's a lot calmer when I was a child. It is at rest, but will always be there." Janet reports that it was a priest's visit to Green Street that resulted in the incidents quieting down in the autumn of 1978. Although the occurrences did not stop entirely, she says, with her mother continuing to hear noises in the house. Janet says, "Even my brother, until the day he left that place after Mom died, would say, there's still something there. You feel like you're being watched." Janet says she continues to believe in the poltergeist, saying, "It lived off me, off my energy. Call me mad if you like. Those events did happen. The poltergeist was with me, and I feel in a sense that he always will be." Who lives at 284 Green Street now? After Peggy Hodson died, Claire Bennett and her four sons moved into the house. Last week, she said, "I didn't see anything, but I felt uncomfortable. There was definitely some kind of presence in the house. I always felt like someone was looking at me." So her sons would wake in the night hearing people talking downstairs. Claire then found out about the house's history. Suddenly, it all made sense, she said. They moved out after just 2 months. I'm with her.
Yeah, how'd she end up there in the first place? How'd you not know?
Probably they didn't advertise it.
Yeah, what kind of jerk didn't, like, put that as a warning?
Yeah, no, right. One of her sons, Shaka, 15, said the night before we moved out, I woke up and saw a man coming into the room. I ran into mom's set room and said, we got to move. And we did the next day. The house is currently occupied by another family who do not wish to be identified. The mother says simply, I've got children. They don't know about it. I don't want to scare them. Though cynics may scoff, the story of the Enfield poltergeist has clearly lost none of its frightening power.
Just slow clap there for that lady that, like, listened to her kids. like, we need to move. All right, doing it tomorrow.
I saw a man in my room. We got to go. Yeah. Kudos.
I know, in a lot of these stories, you see the parents are just like, no, oh, there's nothing wrong. But I'm just, you know, if Nancy came to me talking about creepy ghosts and stuff, I'd be like, time to move, time to move. Radioactive, time to move.
You say that, but you clean shit there yourself, so.
Yeah, true. I don't know, like, it's one thing seeing things, but the amount of stuff that happened here, like, you know, knowing the history behind it and then seeing stuff yourself, it's like, no.
I've seen some stuff here, and I haven't really talked about it because I don't go seeking that shit out anymore, really, because other than for stories for the podcast, obviously, but I don't go seeking out paranormal activity anymore. I've seen stuff out of the corner of my eye here at this house. I know it was an elderly lady that had lived here for years before, and that she must have passed, and it was her family that inherited it. I believe her son or grandson, I think. Not 100% sure on that, because we didn't even meet them when we closed on the house. Like, we didn't meet them. It was done separately, I think. I can't remember why, but at their request, I guess they didn't want to meet us. But, so, I feel like there is a presence here, but I don't go looking for it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, I'm good. Yeah. I like my house. I don't want to think about that.
Let's live together in harmony.
Yeah, exactly. But no, that's the end of that story. But I did want to say something. I don't know if you even know this, but I had some blackouts when I was in college, according to my ex-husband. I don't really remember them, but he told me that I would talk about certain traumas and shit, and I would just be, like, blacked out and didn't remember any of it. Like, it's almost like I was sleep talking or something. Like, I would be laying down and I would just talk. And I didn't remember. And I don't know why. It's, like, because I don't remember, I'm kind of questioning whether it was him messing with me or not, because,
yeah,
like,
Gaslighting,
yes. So I really don't know if that really happened. I guess it could have, because I definitely have enough trauma for that to be a thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's what he told me happened. And he also told me during one of those incidents that I swung a bat on him. I don't know if that happened either.
You were possessed.
Maybe I was. Probably by our dad. But anyway.
Yeah.
It's called Sharing DNA with Someone Who's a Monster.
Yay.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we're going to move on to our list. And we already told you guys to go watch Fear Street and Midnight Mass and Train to Busan and
Sex
Education. We'll just say those again. And,
yep.
And hi, Bonna.
Yay.
We forgot Bonna last time. We don't forget you. It's just sometimes we are like, she's probably sick of hearing her own name by now.
Yeah.
So we just try to sprinkle it in here and there. Yeah.
Make sure you're listening.
Yeah, Bonna. Are you listening, Bonna? Yeah. Today's list is phobias.
Yeah, I didn't know if you just wanted like phobias that are entertaining, but I just had enough for my own list of my phobias.
No, it's just literally my own phobias.
Okay, sweet. Good to know we're fucked up together.
Yep. It's family.
And you went first last time, so number 5 phobia for me, which I feel is somewhat stupid. Well, really all of them. But thanatophobia.
What?
And that's the fear of losing loved ones. Which we obviously all are afraid of losing loved ones, right? But I find myself... I use the word daydreaming.
I didn't look up the names of the official names of them.
I did because I felt fancy.
Okay. Well, now I feel really bad.
So, fear of losing loved ones. I say the word daydreaming. That sounds really wrong because it's like I'm daydreaming of my family dying. But no, it's more like that's where my thoughts go sometimes. Like,
yeah,
I got a call from Nancy the other day during school hours. Like, normally we just text during school hours, and she called, and my immediate fear was like, oh my God, it's a school shooting. Oh my God. You know, like that was the immediate thing. And I just had this intense anxiety, or like, if Justin's gone for work, I start thinking about, oh my God, what if he dies in a car accident? And like, it, I think about these things multiple times throughout the day. Like, you know, Nancy is not riding the bus anymore. So I'm like, oh my God, where is she? When is she getting home? Who's taking her? They're all going to die in a fire crash. Or like Nancy, you know, I used to check Nancy every night before she went to bed to make sure she was breathing. Well, now bitch stays up later than I do. So I can't do that anymore. And so sometimes
you just told your daughter a bitch.
Yeah, because I can't check on her anymore. And she's increasing this phobia. But like, there was one night last week where she was sick and she took NyQuil. And I was like, what if she like passes out and smufficates? And like, it's just like a constant way. Like, I'm constantly thinking about if and how my family's going to die. And to the point where it's like, and definitely becoming a phobia. Anyway, that was a lot of information. So number five for you.
Basically the same thing, except I just didn't know the fancy word, and I just kind of did it a more general one of being alone. I'm always scared that I'm going to lose them in terrible ways, like you said, but I'm also scared that people will just be tired of me. Like, so I'm scared James will leave me and I'm going to just be alone and everybody's going to die. And it just, all of that stuff wrapped into one thing. So that's,
yeah,
a big one on me. I think about that kind of shit all the time. And I have nightmares, thanks to our dad, all the time, of people around me getting shot and murdered. Yeah,
stabbed.
And, yeah, all that stuff. So, yeah. And I worry about it in the daytime, too. Like you were saying, I think about that kind of stuff. I think part of it's like a defense mechanism. You feel like if I think out all the worst case scenarios, maybe they won't happen.
Yeah, I'm an overanalyzer and purely anxiety driven person as it is, so I think that's where a lot of that comes from.
Yep. Totally get it. We're fucked up together.
Yeah, the rest of mine are somewhat normal, at
mine
least.
Are not.
Number four for me is acrophobia, which is the fear of heights. Which is funny, I don't necessarily not mind being high up. It's I don't want to be close to the edge unless something is super sturdy. Like, yeah. I don't know how I would ever handle going to the Empire State Building. I think I would be okay. But, like, there's something, like, being at a height, I have to be able to hold something. I can't just freely look over the edge of something. It's that, like, I have vertigo. And I feel dizzy when I'm at heights, which I think is purely like acrophobia at that point. But like, as long as I have something to hold on to, I will be able to handle being at a great height. But like, I can't just walk willy-nilly up high, if that makes sense. So yeah. Anyway, yeah. Four for you.
Dementia.
I guess because
I already have like some brain fog issues and memory issues. I'm so scared of dementia. Like, I feel like I'm already in early stages of dementia now, so it scares me really bad. Like, I'm like, what's gonna happen when I can't, like, it's already so frustrating that some days, like, I'll burn our food and I'll cry about it, you know? So I'm like, yeah, if I get to that point, I'm probably gonna want to kick it. Just, I don't want to live anymore, and that's scary too, you know. Yeah. Like, because I'm like, if I get to that point where I can't use my brain to do my creative shit, then to me, there's no point in going on.
Yeah.
So that's scary to me.
Yeah. I get that.
Number three
for me is ophidiophobia, which is the fear of snakes.
Hmm.
I've always been afraid of snakes. I don't even like looking at them at zoos. I don't like friends that have snakes. Like, I don't go into their rooms that they have snakes in.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Justin would love to have a pet snake. And I'm like, no. I don't even like looking at pictures of snakes. The only ones I can handle are the ones where snakes have hats.
Yeah.
The, like, snake, what you doing, snake things. Like, that's all I can handle. Like, and I don't know what it is. I guess it came from, like, being younger and, like, riding my bike and a snake went by and just playing a lot outdoors. But just something about snakes and the fact that they don't have arms and legs really freaked me out.
Yeah.
How do they get up trees? They don't have hands. It's like magnets. How do they work? Snakes. How do they work? I don't like it. All right. But number three for you.
More. It feels like all of mine up to this point are all mental health related. And yeah. Here's another one. Inner thoughts and voices. I do have them. I mean, I think everybody does to a certain extent, but it scares me because I listen to all these murder podcasts and the dude's like, there was a demon and it would talk to me in my head and it told me to kill that guy. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, am I going to be that person one day? Like, it kind of scares me a little bit.
Yeah.
So, but because I do have a darker side to me, probably because of dad's DNA yet again. But
just the whole list, afraid of being our parents.
Yeah. I just changed the whole list of that because that's pretty much the big thing. Afraid of being our parents, especially dad. So yeah, that's mine.
Number two for me is lelapsophobia, which is the fear of tornadoes.
Damn it, I didn't put tornadoes. What the fuck? You just caught me off guard with that. I was like, wait. Okay.
Yeah, like I'm super crazy anal when it comes to thunderstorms, because especially in this area. One of the main reasons I bought the house I'm in is because it has a freaking tornado shelter with a storm shelter. So we have a whole plan. We have an emergency kit, a bag that's pre-packed with flashlights and a radio and playing cards, and our storm shelter has a nice table and chairs and animal crates. Like, we are storm preppers for tornadoes because of my fears.
Yeah.
Number two for you.
Something happening to my teeth.
Because mine are just already way fucked, so I'm past the point of no return there.
No, I guess I'm more afraid of losing some or chipping them or, you know, like stuff like that, because I have weird teeth anyway. I have, anybody that's seen a real picture of me or has knows me in person, I rarely ever show them to anybody. Like, I don't smile much with my teeth anyway, because it's just a thing that I have about my teeth, because I have a large gap in my front teeth and it's natural, and I'm, when people do see it, it gets a reaction usually. Like, I don't know, when Sahara's kid Nora was little, she was like, what happened to the tooth that was in the middle of those teeth? And I'm like, I was born this way. You know, but kids of course don't know any better to ask questions like that. But that kind of stuff is very upsetting to me, and I guess people don't realize it. It always has been. And so I feel like if something happened in my, like, we don't have insurance, we don't have dental insurance, can't afford to go to a dentist right now. So if my teeth got knocked out, I probably would just not leave my house. I'm dead serious. I'm so weird about that. Like, I would probably cry and stay home. Like, I would not step foot out of the house.
Yeah.
Probably ever again until I could fucking fix my teeth, honestly. And that's really sad, but it's true. I probably would not. I'm really paranoid about it. To the point where I dream about that a lot, too. I dream about somebody knocking my front teeth out or whatever. Yeah. And I'm just like, nope. Mm-mm.
Yeah, my teeth are just bad because I don't take care of them. So I have a lot of that, too. But I started even talking to my dentist about fixing some of the problems. And they're like, no, that's a lot of money. And I'm like, I don't care. I need them fixed. Anyway, I need to hurry up because I got a movie to go see. My number one is Jephyrophobia, which is the fear of bridges. My most ridiculous fear on my list. I am afraid of bridges. I do not like them.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I dream about driving off of bridges a lot into water and drowning. It's also combined with the heights, I guess, and all of that. But no thanks. No thanks, bridges. Get out of here. I know your purpose is a good one, but you scare me.
And number one for me, who probably anybody that listens to the show already knows, is birds. For me, which my own niece, your daughter, has made fun of me for since she was little.
Yeah.
She's like, they just go tweet, tweet. She's like 2 years old. She's like, they just go tweet, tweet. Why are you scared of birds? I'm like, I can't explain it. I don't know if something happened to me when I was little or whatever, but I don't have a memory of anything specific. I've just always, I think it's the, I'm a control freak, and anything that flies towards me is unpredictable and uncontrollable. Yeah. And that scares me. That's what scares me, because it's bat. I like, bats have flown into my vicinity and I ran and screamed like a bitch too. Yeah. So it's just, it's that. Although I don't like larger birds that can't fly either. But I don't know. It's just an unpredictability thing. Yeah. I don't like it. They can fly up to me and peck my eye out. So I just don't like it. That's mine. That's all the end.
Yeah, that's all I got. No honorable mentions.
After you said tornadoes, I put tornadoes because I've had bad dreams about those my whole life.
I'm scared of everything. That's all.
My grandma told me it was because I was going to die from tornadoes. Mm-hmm. Our psychic medium grandma's like, you're having tornado dreams because you're going to die from that eventually.
Thanks, Grandma.
Thanks, Grandma. I'm going to be paranoid about that the rest of my life. And I'm also one of those people that's scared that I have to be dressed whenever a storm comes, because if that sucker hits my house, I don't want to be out in some, like the tornado threw me into another state and I'm naked or something, you know? Like,
yeah.
Or without my glasses or contacts either. I'm so paranoid about that kind of stuff. Anyway,
All right. That's
the end of this episode. So she can go see the new James Bond movie. Bye-bye. Tell us next time if it's good.
Do-do-bye.
Bye.